Thank you, Your Honor. It pleases the court, counsel. This is an appeal from a trial court's issuance of summary judgment based upon finding that the plaintiff appellant Annette Berenson had executed a written prospective release of liability. The underlying case was a personal injury action. Ms. Berenson, who was a participant in a amateur hockey league at the Edge Hockey Arena in Littleton, claimed that she was tackled and thrown to the ice during the course of the game. She suffered a compound fracture of her leg. She had brought claims against the both USA Hockey and the league on theories of negligence and responding superior. The defendants filed a motion for summary judgment in the district court. The summary judgment motion was based upon a prospective release that the defendants claimed that Ms. Berenson had signed in the course of her online registration with USA Hockey. In order to play in the amateur league at the Edge Ice Arena, she was required to register with, as a member of USA Hockey on an annual basis. In support of the summary judgment motion, the defendants had filed an affidavit of Ray Gribble, who is an employee of USA Hockey. Essentially, what the affidavit stated was that the registration process for USA Hockey was performed online on the USA Hockey website. Now, one of the pages of the registration, there was a form release in a window. Adjacent to that was a written acknowledgement of the terms of the release and the agreement to be bound by the release. And the release was to be executed the way the website was set up by the registrar, in this case Ms. Berenson, typing in her initials in the field adjacent to that acknowledgement.
So let me ask you a question about that. When she typed the initials, it didn't go on the actual document, the waiver document. Instead, it was more in the nature of a dialogue box?
That's my understanding from Ms. Brickle's affidavit, yes. So it was in a window, and I've actually looked at it. It's not part of the record, but apparently there's a window with the release, which the registrant scrolls down. Adjacent to that, to the left, is the acknowledgement language, and below that's a box where the registrant is to type in their initials.
So when the registrant types in their initials, does that appear on the page of the waiver itself, and is it part of the record, or does it go away somewhere?
That I don't know. There's nothing in the record to indicate where it would go. I would assume that it would be stored or preserved in some manner. But
well, it was undisputed that she registered.
It is undisputed that she registered, yes.
And as I understand opposing counsel's argument, by way of the affidavit, she could not have registered without the initial.
That is the argument, yes. Based upon Ms. Briggle's affidavit. Now, the question in this appeal is a very narrow evidentiary issue, namely whether that affidavit in itself was admissible in evidence so as to be considered by the trial court on summary judgment under Rule 56E. And I think under the best evidence rule, Rules 1003 through 1004, it simply was not.
Well, let me ask you, counsel, if we don't know whether or not a record could have been made of it, how can we say that the best evidence rule requires the production of a record?
The best evidence rule requires that where there is a writing, and under is discussed in briefs, the initial acknowledgement is a writing is defined both by Rule 1004 and the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, that in order to prove that writing, that execution, the writing itself, in other words, a printout of her initial acknowledgement, is the only competent evidence unless the proponent of the evidence can satisfactorily show to the court that the writing itself, in other words, a printout, is lost, destroyed, stolen, or otherwise not available.
I understand that, counsel, but again, I thought you just told us a couple minutes ago, we don't even know whether or not a printout was possible showing the initials.
Had the defendant made a showing in the trial court that it was not possible to print this out, it was not preserved, then under Rule 1004, Ms. Briegel's affidavit would have been admissible.
Did the other side respond to your motion for reconsideration raising the best evidence rule?
My recollection is they did not. The court issued its ruling on that before the defense had filed a response. It's axiomatic that in order to force the terms of any contract and release is considered an applicable law to be a contract, it has to be shown that the person against whom the contract is to be enforced, executed, or agreed to be bound by the terms of the contract. Here, as I've discussed, the agreement or execution to this prospective release was evidenced, according to Ms. Briegel's affidavit, by placing the registrant's initials in the field next to the acknowledgement. That execution is a writing as provided by applicable law. The only evidence of execution of the release that was submitted to the district court was the Briegel affidavit saying essentially that she must have done so. It's secondary evidence in the best evidence rule. It is not admissible. The best evidence rule is not like Rule 403, 404, where there's some discretion involved. It's black and white. It states if you do not produce the original writing or a duplicate of the writing, and you do not give a satisfactory explanation as to why that writing is not available, going back to the court's question, had the defense come in and submitted something either by affidavit or otherwise to establish that we just don't keep things, or we can't find them, our computer crashed, or it's not set up to preserve these, we would have a very different issue here.
But are you know, would the defendant be expected to respond to your motion for reconsideration? See, because that is where the defendant, you know, would have disputed whether or not a writing was available or not. You know, should the party have been expected to have responded to your motion for reconsideration?
I do not recall from the record whether or not the court did ask for a response to that reconsideration. However, I think the burden under the best evidence rule was at the time they filed their supporting documentation for summary judgment, that is the point in which they were obligated to comply with the rule. In other words, have the proper foundation for Ms. Briegel's affidavit. In other words, had they filed with Ms. Briegel's affidavit something, you know, we don't know where it is, we can't find it, or we don't preserve these, then the affidavit itself would have been admissible for the purpose of proving execution of the release. But they did nothing. There's nothing in the record to indicate that the original writing or duplicate of the writing was not available. Did they have the opportunity? I think they had the initial burden. I think is the best way to put it. They had the initial burden to submit competent evidence. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve.
Let me ask you a question. Assuming that was admissible evidence, assuming the secondary evidence was admissible evidence, would the absence of a record, and assuming there was such a thing as a record, would the absence of a record create a material issue of fact?
As I understand the court's question, you were asking whether or not, the admissibility issue aside, whether Ms. Briegel's affidavit was enough. I think it on its face, probably yes. However, it does beg the question, if she did in fact execute this release in writing, where is it?
No, that goes back to, I think, your first question. My question is, assuming the secondary evidence was admissible evidence and is properly before the trial court, is there a material issue of fact created simply by the absence of the actual writing itself?
No.
Okay.
May it please the court, I'm John Lutzak. I represent USA Hockey and other appellee. First, let me just clarify something that Mr. Scherer answered in response to Judge Daly's question. I think it's just a memory slip, which is that we did respond to the motion for reconsideration. And so that was fully briefed.
And let me ask you then, in that motion for reconsideration, did you assert that there is no such possibility of a record showing her initials?
No, because the initials were not raised as part of the motion.
Oh, well, I thought that the motion for reconsideration was best evidence. You got to show the executed agreement.
Yes, but not the specific thing as to the initials. So if the issue is the best evidence rule applies to the initials, then that issue was not specifically raised in the motion for reconsideration, and our response to it did not address that either. We addressed the general question of, was the Briggle affidavit admissible evidence? We responded to that. The motion did not get down to the specific, you know, issue of what initials were entered on the website. But that doesn't matter, and I'll explain why. Let me back up to the start of what my argument is going to be. There's two steps in applying the release. One is, was the release accepted? And the second thing is, if it was accepted, is it enforceable? This case doesn't involve that second issue. All we're talking about is summary judgment. Is there a question of fact on whether the release was accepted? So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, whether the release was executed to be an acceptance.
Well, you know, let me address that. There's no actual requirement under the law that a release has to be executed to be effective. There is a requirement that it has to be accepted. So I'm gonna, if you say that in order for a release to be effective, it has to be signed, I'm not aware of any requirement in the law that says a signature must be affixed to a release to make it effective.
Did you argue in your briefs that you didn't need the initials to have an effective acceptance? Did you argue that in your briefs?
No. What I said was in the initials, or as to the initials, is that in the website process to complete the registration, it is necessary to enter your initials on the page that has the release form on it, signifying your acceptance of the release.
Right, so it could have just been set up to click on a link to signify acceptance.
Yes.
Or acceptance could be evidenced verbally, although not through the computer.
Exactly.
Well, wait a second.
That's my...
Before you go, exactly, I thought you said, and I thought the affidavit averred that you need the initials before the okay or acceptance.
Yes, but as far as signifying acceptance, it's not. There's nothing magic about entering your initials that makes it, I accept it. You could do acceptance in a variety of ways. You could type your full name to indicate acceptance. We could say, please enter your full name and type your, that indicates acceptance. We could have just said, you know, an okay, I accept the terms of the release. That would be it. We could have just said, okay.
Did you argue that in your answer brief?
No, but we argued that the initials are part of the process to signify the acceptance. So we didn't actually make the argument that any kind of acceptance is okay. But my point here is that the initials, there's nothing magic about whether the initials were A, B, her actual initials, or whether she entered something else. We don't know.
Right. It just happened to be the process was set up this way on this particular web page.
Yes.
Okay.
So, as far as the record, does it contain what initials she entered? That's not in the record, and I don't know. What is in the record is what Mr. Briggle explained about how you do the process of the website registration. We know, there's no question of the fact that she did the registration.
She did it several years. Ms. Berenson admitted that. She admitted going through the steps. She admitted seeing some disclaimers. She didn't get into the specifics. She couldn't remember a release. That doesn't create a question of fact, because Mr. Briegel establishes that you can't go through the registration process without signifying your acceptance of the release by entering the initials. So, in his affidavit...
So, the initials are the way in which you signify the acceptance.
Correct. And that is in paragraph 7 of his affidavit, which is in the record at page 110. On the page that includes the waiver of liability, I'll skip a few words, Ms. Berenson would have been required to insert her initials and thereby affirmatively agreed to the terms therein in order to complete the registration. So that is the step that requires to signify your acceptance of that.
And that step is undisputed.
That is undisputed as...
I mean, there's not a computer problem.
No.
There's nothing missing.
What? In other words,
well, why isn't the initials considered a content of the waiver that should have to be proved through best evidence unless there is no record or you have an explanation why there is no record?
The reason is that to indicate acceptance of the waiver, you don't need to record somebody's initials in order to prove that. It is nice to
have. You couldn't go through the process without signifying acceptance by giving your initials. That's just what you just said.
Yes, but there's no requirement to record what those initials actually were in order to make a computer data point that she has completed the registration process, she clicked through the required steps, she gave her credit card information if it was needed, she entered the fields that were required, she had to signify acceptance by entering those initials.
So let me stop you there.
All right.
The acceptance, the initials, whatever she used, were a necessary condition for the registration. If she decided not to accept the waiver, she could not have registered.
Correct. That is established by paragraph 7.
And that's undisputed.
It is undisputed.
Now, why aren't the initials contents of the document to be proven?
Because best evidence rule requires that it only applies if you're going to try to prove the contents of the affidavit, or the contents of the writing, excuse me. Well, this case is not about what initials were entered. Was it AB? Was it CD? Was it something else?
But this case is about whether some initials were entered.
Yes, whether any initials were entered. It doesn't matter what initials were entered. You can't get through the registration process unless you enter your initials. It asks you to enter your initials. I don't know what initials were entered.
She could have entered any initials, I suppose, and it would have accepted?
Yes.
Or now, if the web page had been set up differently, she could have just clicked OK.
Yes.
Okay.
And if it had been set up differently.
If it had been set up differently. But this one is set up so that it requires you to enter initials. Now, the data that is on the screenshot, which is the data under Rule of Evidence 1001, subpart 3, which is, you know, talks about whether you need the original. The only data that is in the record is this screenshot. And the screenshot, which is record page 113, has her name, her address, and so on, and it shows 4 different registrations and the dates. And the membership number that she was assigned, which you get only if you register and you complete the registration process, and it's got a code there that says, oh, meaning she did this online. So the data that is accurately reflected in this screenshot is that she completed the registration online, gives the date, and then you refer back to how Mr. Briegel explains what the website, how it was set up, was that if you're going to do the online registration, you have to go through a step that requires you to signify, in the way that we set up, USA Hockey set it up, signify your acceptance of the release. So I respectfully submit that the best evidence rule doesn't even apply here, because it would apply if this case hinged on what initials were actually in. And that's not what this case hinges on. So this case
does hinge on whether or not some initials were inserted.
Correct. Yes. But whether what particular initials were entered is not dispositive. Just the fact that initials were entered, because you can't get through the registration process without doing that. So Mr. Riggle's affidavit establishes the routine practice. It's actually when you're trying to look into a website, I mean, it's analogous to a corporate routine practice. It is how the website was set up. He explains how you do this. How the website's set up, you can't actually complete the registration without entering that. So based on the evidence of what the website is set up, how it was set up, the evidence that she completed the registration several times, there's no question of fact on those things. And because of that, the trial court properly entered summary judgment. Thank you.
The only point I would like to make is that in order to bind Ms. Berenson to the language in the terms of this release, the defendants had to prove that she had accepted or executed the release, in other words, signed the contract, signed the written release. The document, or the writing, so to speak, that proves that is the executed initial acknowledgement that they claim Ms. Berenson did during the course of her registration.
Mr. Chair, why do they have to prove that she signed the written release if all they have to prove is that she assented to it? Aren't there ways to assent other than signing it?
Well, this was a written contract, and again, releases are essentially contracts. Use a very simple example of a breach of claim for a breach of a written contract. The plaintiff, in order to prove their claim as an element of the claim, has to prove that the defendant agreed to or assented to this contract. In the case of a written contract, if the plaintiff were to go up on the stand to a blank copy of the contract that he claimed was executed by the defendant, because I was sitting there and I watched him sign it, so I know he signed it. Question is that sufficient evidence, but the threshold question is whether it's admissible under the best evidence rule. And in that case, clearly under the best evidence rule, absent an explanation for its unavailability, the original signed written contract is the only admissible evidence of the defendant's assent to the contract. And I think that's the situation we have.
Okay. Do you dispute that some initials were entered?
My client has no recollection of it.
Okay, but as far as summary judgment, opposing counsel has indicated there's no way she could have registered but for entering some initials.
The only documentation we have of that particular point is the matter stated in Ms. Riddle's affidavit.
Not disputing it, she just can't recall.
She can't recall.
Okay, so does it matter what initials were entered?
Some initials had to have been entered.
Does it matter what initials?
Well, for example, had the printout of initial acknowledgement that they were asserting came from Ms. Berenson's USA Hockey registration, and they weren't Ms. Berenson's initials, they were ABC or XYZ, for example, you would have a question of fact, I think, as to whether or not that particular printout was from Ms. Berenson's initials, and they would have to prove that through extrinsic evidence. It would be basically how they pulled it out of their database or whatever. So I don't think the question of whose initials are there, is really central to the issue on appeal. The question is whether or not whether this was a writing, and I submit that it was, and if so, whether secondary evidence of that writing, of that executed acknowledgement, is admissible, and we would say no.
Would you say whether writing showing any initials?
Well, hypothetically, had they come up with a writing showing some initials.
Right.
But not hers.
Right.
It would be an issue of fact, I think, as to whether or not that was actually her who had affixed those initials there. They would have to establish.
Would there be an issue of fact when your client can't recall whether she did or didn't?
Potentially, yes. Because, you know, they would, you know, on its face, that particular printout, that particular writing, does not show that she was the one who actually affixed those initials.
Ms. Berenson agreed that she went through the registration process. She just said she couldn't remember whether she put the initials on the box.
That's correct. And I would submit that's beside the point. That's a very narrow evidentiary issue as to whether the description in Ms. Brittle's affidavit as to how the you know, how the process worked was admissible under Rules 1001 through 1004. I see I'm out of time, so if we can go to the questions.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you, Counsel, for your arguments. Case will stand submitted and opinion will issue in due course.